100.9 Belfast.
Support for Belfast Community Radio comes from our listeners and from the Old Professor's Bookshop, a Harvard Square bookstore in downtown Maine, featuring a unique selection of scholarly and rare new and used books, located at 99 Main Street, open 10 to 4 most days.
This is your Belfast Community Radio Station, WBFY-FM at 100.9, broadcasting from Waterfall Arts. As the station takes off and grows, it will need support from local volunteers to make the station serve our diverse community. If you have an interest in being on air, networking within the community, fundraising, or supporting the station in other ways, please contact us. You can email info@belfastcommunityradio.org or contact us on Facebook. And thanks for listening. We hope to hear from you.
My guest this week on Books and Writers is Caitlin Hamilton-Summey. She's an author and she's a book publicist. She'll talk to us today about what it took to get her book published. She'll also take some time to tell us about what it might take to get your book published and promoted. Caitlin Hamilton-Summey earned an MFA with distinction from Colorado State University. Her short stories have been published in Beloit Fiction Journal, Wisconsin Review, Puerto del Sol, Mud Season Review, and Long Story Short. Her first book, an award-winning short story collection called To Lay to Rest Our Ghosts, was released in August 2017 by Fomite Press. Her first novel, Geographies of the Heart, is due out January 22, also from Fomite Press. She spent years in Massachusetts, Minnesota, and Colorado before settling with her family in Knoxville, Tennessee. She co-owns the book marketing firm Caitlin Hamilton Marketing and Publicity, founded in 2003. Caitlin leads workshops and classes on marketing and publicity and on crafting short stories. Caitlin Hamilton-Summey, welcome to the show. Nice to have you.
Thank you. I'm pleased to be here.
Caitlin, I have a bunch of stuff I want to talk to you about, your writing and your publicity work both. Actually, I should say book publicity work. But how about if we start with your newest book, the one that's coming out soon, Geographies of the Heart. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. It is a first novel, and it's about a young woman in her early 20s named Sarah McMillan, who is grappling with a lot of changes in her family. She's grown up in a multi-generational family and is meeting for the first time somebody really special she thinks she might marry. And as much as the positives and exciting things and expanding her family are developing, she's facing imminent loss as her grandparents begin to rapidly decline. And it is about her navigating changes to her family and trying to establish for herself the roots in her own family, immediate and broader, that are so important to her.
Yeah.
She's trying to anchor her life as she goes forward.
Sure, I got you. It fair to say, I suppose, that dynamics in the family, personalities of the folks in the family are a big focus of this book.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. It's very much a novel about characters.
Yeah.
And about how families deal with tricky situations or painful situations and either manage to heal rifts or not. Very much a story about how our hearts guide us and fail us.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. And having been through your book, I can say there's highs and lows both in there. Would that be fair to say? You've as families go, this family has wonderful moments and not so wonderful moments.
Oh, absolutely. I think every family goes through those.
Yeah.
I don't know any family that hasn't suffered some kind of loss or change or trial. And this is about how they get through theirs. And
yeah.
they have a couple of things that knock the family foundation, so to speak. And it becomes a challenge for them to rise above and hold together. And the question of the book is, will they? In
mm-hmm.
particular for Sarah, because family has always been her bedrock. It's the most important thing in her life.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
the thing she values the most.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is whether or not the family will survive some of the blows they've faced. And And all families face blows, and I think individuals face blows, and couples face traumas as well. So it's about trying to rise above those and hold together and hold on to what's most important.
Sure, sure. Well, it sounds like for a person, certainly for a reader whose interests ran into questions about family drama, family relationships, this would be a real good choice of a book.
Yeah, I hope so. I think so.
Yeah. Tell me a little about where you got the spark to become a writer. At some point along the way, something happened and you said, I might just be able to do this. Can you give us an idea where that came from?
Well, I can and I can't. I can say that my mother told me that before I'd learned to read or write, I would march downstairs and present her with these scribbles and tell her I had written a story.
Mm-hmm.
And because they were truly scribbles, I didn't even know my letters yet.
Mm-hmm.
She asked me to read them to her.
Yeah.
I've always found that very moving
mm-hmm.
and astute, because I'm a mother, and I would never have thought of that, I don't think, to ask the child to read me the story. So I've written all my life, and I've always wanted to be a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I became an adult, I just continued with my passion. I went and earned an MFA in creative writing from Colorado State University. And although I didn't study English or writing in college, I did work in publishing and have remained in publishing because I love stories, and I think stories matter so much.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the side, just pursued my own work and just kept the faith.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to get my first book done, and a long time to get my second book done.
Yep. And it sounds like you're one of those lucky people who has family and friends who offer support. I mean, if you managed to get an MFA, you probably had lots of encouragement from the sidelines.
My parents have been incredibly supportive ever since I was just tiny. But they've also been honest. You know, they've given me feedback that allowed me to grow without devastating me, you know, because I was so young.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote my first novella at 13 and my first novel at 18. So they were very careful, I think, to encourage, but not solely to cheerlead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did have criticisms and they did have advice, but they've always championed me, and that has been critical. And my husband, Rick, has been really, really critical to my going on too, because you know, there was a time when I wondered, oh, should I really pursue the book, and Rick said yes. My husband Rick encouraged me to pursue publication.
Mm-hmm.
And that first book was published, and I thanked him at my launch, because he really gave me the heart to keep going.
That's wonderful. That's a heartwarming story, and one that I'm sure you're glad to be able to tell. It sounds like in your own life, family is something you valued dearly, and that might have something to do with your choice of a subject for Geographies of the Heart.
Yes, family is bedrock to me, too. I'm not Sarah, and this family isn't my family. But family has always been absolutely key, and I was very close with my grandparents. We did all live in one house, and so I'm always interested in family and relationships and how those dynamics work together in
mm-hmm.
fiction.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, and it matters, yes, in my own life, too. Yes.
Yeah. Well, people are always interested when they read books to find out if there's any connection with real life. And let me ask that question this way. Did you have to get anybody's permission before you wrote any of the episodes that became Geographies of the Heart?
No. I think, you know, these people are certainly not my family.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I would say, and what I've said before, is that what's true here is the emotion, you know, the sense of hope, the feelings of loss, I don't have a sister, as mm-hmm. Sarah does in the novel, with yeah. whom I battle. Indeed, my only sibling and I are quite close, and it's my big brother,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
So this really isn't driven by fact, but certainly growing up with grandparents, watching them decline, the emotions of that were something I could tap into.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally there are threads that pop in.
Yeah.
I'm always surprised by that. I'll be writing along, and then something will pop in, and I'll realize, oh, you know, that is based in fact. That is a moment that happened, you know. But it's never plotted. It's never planned. I'm a pantser. I just write and write and write until I find my story. And it's one reason my books have taken 25 and 27 years, because I have to write my way into them. But occasionally something will pop in that is factual.
Yeah, yeah. And let me talk about the logistics of getting published for just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You got Geographies of the Heart accepted by a publisher and moving on a purposeful way towards publication, and you did it all without a literary agent.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little about that process, what your thinking was and how that worked?
I did look for a literary agent. I think probably most people do. And I didn't get one, as sometimes happens. And I think in part it's because maybe the submission wasn't ready when I sent it out. Maybe I was a draft or two too early, although my readers and I thought it was done. I think that... that it's also possible that literary fiction might be a tougher sell in the last many years
mm-hmm.
than other genres. So I went ahead and found homes for my short stories in journals, and then Fomite Press invited me to submit a short story collection. It took me about a year, and then I did.
Mm-hmm.
So Fomite kind of reached out to me, which was lovely. Mark Estrin, the co-founder and editor, is someone with whom I've worked in the past for his own writing. And he suddenly realized I was writing and reached out to ask if he could see what I had.
Mm-hmm.
So though I didn't have an agent, I found the most wonderful home in Fomite Press.
Mm-hmm.
And they are a literary publisher based out of Burlington, Vermont. They were founded in 2011. And I think this year they're doing about 25 books. I don't know how many they do a year, but they've published more than 100, and they've had award winners and been on some important shortlists. They're
sure.
quite good press.
Sure.
Yeah.
It sounds like you found a good match. Maybe you can tell us a little how you went about that, if you researched publishers or compared.
Well, I didn't research Fomite because Mark had reached out to me, and I knew Mark. And I knew a little bit about the press at that point as well. I knew it would be a good fit for me. But I do advise writers who don't have agents who might be handling their own submissions to absolutely research presses and look for fits. I know it probably sounds a little bit odd, but not every publisher is right for every book. In the same way that you would research an agent before applying, I think people should research and vet publishers and make sure that they understand who they're submitting to and whether or not they'd be a good fit and why.
Sure.
It's really, there are so many different kinds of publishers, you know.
Sure. Well, I've long thought that there are a lot of different avenues toward figuring out how to publish and how to get a book that you've written in front of an audience. And it sounds like part of your approach happened to coincide with who you knew. You, in your community of writers and related folks, you happened to know somebody who you were able to benefit from. You both benefited from it because the familiarity probably allowed you to dispense with a certain amount of the research.
In my case, was very particular and individual. Yeah, I didn't need to do the kinds of research that I'm suggesting others do, because I did know the publisher. I did know the press. But had I not had the invitation to submit, had I decided to submit on my own, I absolutely would have been doing research and checking out what they publish and what their terms are, all those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask a different question, going down a different line. People are always interested, when I talk to listeners to the show, they're always interested in, like I might have mentioned to you before we spoke, the logistics of getting a book published. And I'm wondering in particular if you felt like the MFA that you earned was instrumental in getting to this point where you got Geographies of the Heart on the cusp of being released on the market.
My MFA was actually back in 1991 to 93. And so it was early in my life. And it was helpful in that I had 3 years to write and found some wonderful friends and readers. There are pieces in the book, my first book, the short story collection called To Lay to Rest Our Ghosts. A number of those were written initially during my MFA. So I think it provided me time to develop the content, time to get things together. The hard part was going on afterward and finding the inspiration and the motivation when I entered the working world and had a family. I didn't have that kind of structure. I didn't have the kind of community support.
Yeah.
And at that point, increasingly, I kind of went solo. I have a couple of readers I go to. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it was on me to get it done whenever time allowed. Yeah. And there were whole years when time did not allow.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So you're one of those writers who maybe got up early before in the morning before work, or worked in the evening after work, getting your book done, adding a few hundred words as often as you could.
Yes, and not even that structured. I would literally take 5 minutes here or an hour there or a weekend day, because I do run my own business with my husband, Rick.
Yep.
And we do have two children. And so there was no set timetable. And it's another reason my books take forever, because I cannot count on having specific times each week or each day.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll commend you for your persistence. It can be very hard. Speaking from experience, it can be very hard to have to work for a living and curry this hope that you're actually going to get this novel done and published someday. That's a tough mountain to climb.
It is, but I do have a supportive family, as you've noted, and I just have a lot of determination. I've been, as I said, writing since I was really, really small, and I wanted to see my books through to publication, to print, and I've done it now. I have one more in the works. Mm-hmm. I think I told you when we first chatted on the phone that it's in year 12. So it looks like I've got another 12 years to go on my pace.
you're more than halfway done.
I'm halfway done. Yeah. I hope to see that one into print. Mm-hmm. But if not, it's okay.
Yeah.
I've gotten two done, and I'm proud of that.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, you talked about having some readers. I presume you're talking about beta readers, and I think it's a very valuable component of the writing process is having somebody with eyes and ears and a voice who can look your work over, before it gets to the point where you're sending it off to agents or publishers, and can give you a reality check. And I'm curious, how many folks do you have as beta readers? And can you tell us a little bit about how you made a connection with them and how you figured out that they were good for the job and also interested in it?
Well, I have two, if they're available. And one is a friend, a fabulous writer in his own right from my MFA program.
Mm-hmm.
And the other beta reader is actually a family member, which a lot of people might think is a terrible idea. But this person comes with some experience and a very keen eye and catches a lot of things. So if those folks are available, they are my go-tos.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And I attended an author's talk once just 2 or 3 years ago with Ann Beatty. And she talked a lot about her readers and the process of reviewing and revising and editing before her work ever left her house and got in the hands of an editor somewhere. And I was surprised at the level of detail and involvement. I had made the wrong presumption that someone with her level of accomplishment and experience maybe didn't need so much, but she said she counted on that and did multiple drafts, and I've always been struck by that. How much work, how much editing goes in before a product gets out the door in the hands of someone who you're hoping will like it. It sounds like you have a little bit of that same philosophy working.
I do. I mean, as I said, I think that one of the reasons that maybe the book didn't resonate with some of the agents was because it was just a draft or two too early and my beta readers, and I thought it was ready to go, and it really wasn't. And I think that can happen sometimes,
yeah.
You know. So I do think it's important to... whatever you're doing, if you're submitting for an agent or submitting with a publisher, to a publisher, to send the best thing you think you've got, the best draft.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that is, I think that's probably pretty standard practice,
sure.
Pretty standard advice.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the process of planning for your book. At some point you decided this was a good subject, Geographies of the Heart, being about family relationships and family values. That to you seemed like something that you were interested in and that struck a chord with you, was meaningful to you. And I would guess at the same time you probably said, I think readers might be interested as well, and I'm interested in that latter portion of the process. What led you to think that this would work for readers? And can you share a little bit about that with us?
I think when I write, I start by hearing a line. And then I write my way into the character and the story. So I write what interests me, what captivates me. And I don't really think about the audience.
No kidding.
I write the story I want to tell.
Okay.
But I do think that my stories and my novel have readers, because I think there are a ton of people interested in character-driven fiction,
mm-hmm.
and in family dramas. And so I think there is an audience. But unlike some other writers, because I work in book publicity, I also know my book is not for everyone.
Yeah.
I'm aware that my audience is a set group of people. But initially when I'm writing, I'm just writing what I want to write.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think about whether or not I think it's worthy of submission, ready to submit,
mm-hmm.
and then who would be interested in reading it.
Sure. So the voice you listen to is your own. It sounds like you are your own counsel at the beginning of the process.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. That's very, very bold of you and admirable.
Well, that's kind of you to say. I don't think I'm alone. I think I just get captivated by something and go with it.
Sure.
I imagine there are a lot of writers out there who work my way, and a lot of writers who have, you know, a different style. It's always interesting when you hear about other writers' prophecies, you know, how they work. But for me, it's something that grabs me, and then I run with it.
Yeah,
even though it's a slow jog there.
Yeah.
That 25 years.
And Caitlin, part of your work, I understand, is we talked about this as a book publicist, and I'm interested in chatting with you a little bit about your experience in that area, lessons you've learned, things you can tell us about what authors can do or maybe steps they can avoid that would allow them to improve their ability to get their book before an audience. Are there common misconceptions, do you suppose, among authors when you talk to clients and other authors? Do you see any pattern to the thinking they have before they've considered the idea of getting a book publicist?
I think two of the things that we see a lot that are problematic are people who call too late. Book publicity requires a long lead time. We actually start work on a book now, 6 months in advance. Now, other book publicists and firms may have different timelines. It's important to clarify that. But in this firm, we come on for books 6 months in advance of publication date.
Okay.
So if you're calling me 4 months in advance of publication date, I'm booked.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's important to understand that book publicists do require lead time in general, even if that lead time varies a little bit. And it's because we need to have galleys, or they're also called advanced reading copies, to send out to the book media for review consideration early. Some magazines have exceedingly long lead times. The trade publications and books are at least they're 4 months, generally speaking. So it's important to have all the materials together, the press release written, the advanced reading copy, so that you can send them out at an appropriate time.
Right, sure.
So we get a lot of phone calls with people who are calling us too late to provide an effective service for them. Or calling too late for us even to consider, because we're already booked, because we book even earlier so we can come on at 6 months. So that's one thing I think authors who have either decided to self-publish or have a publishing contract with a publishing company ought to know, is that they need to educate themselves on when book publicity should begin for their book. The other thing we get a lot in phone calls is, even if people have called us at the right time, they call asking what we can do for them. And I'm happy to answer that question, but I always ask, well, what are your expectations? What are your goals, and what are you hoping to achieve? And there are a number of authors who have no idea how to answer those questions. And I say, you know, it's something really important for you to think about, because if you don't know what your goals and expectations are, you can't evaluate whether our campaign will meet them or has met them. So it's really important for you to sit down and think carefully about what you want to achieve, and then what you expect a publicist to do to help you meet that goal. And then it's easier to determine if that publicist is a fit for you. You know, I think it's really key to have a publicist who's a fit, somebody who works in your genre, somebody who understands your goals, has a plan for meeting them. And you just can't evaluate whether or not somebody would be an effective member of your team if you don't know what you want. So those are the two things we find most often, that people don't understand the timing of book publicity, and they don't know what they want.
When you talk about an author's expectations, what they want, can you be more specific? I'm curious, do you have in mind sales numbers? Do you have in mind the subject and presentation of a book? Or is it something different entirely?
No, you're thinking along the lines that we are when we ask the question. We want to know if they are interested in sales. Mm-hmm. We want to, you know, or a certain number. We want, or are they interested in building their brand? Or are they interested in publishing a first book that does well enough to help them launch a series? I mean, those kinds of things. Those help us determine who they are, what we need to be thinking about.
Sure, sure. And daring to go down this one road, which of the authors, when you ask about expectations, I guess what I'm wondering is, which authors tend to do best? They're the ones, I suppose, who have the clearest expectations. I'm wondering if you can think of anything in particular that makes it apparent that you think they have clear expectations.
If I ask the question and they say, well, I'm really looking to see a better sales number with this book, or I'm really here looking just to get the reviews, I understand my genre might be a little hard sell, but I really would like the credibility of the reviews, and so I would be interested in a campaign that emphasized coverage. Although everybody wants sales, everybody wants to do well, but some people are looking for slightly different things, and it's helpful to know what they want.
Mm-hmm. Sure. The long advance time, let's talk about that for a minute. It sounds like a certain amount of patience, maybe a bunch of patience, has got to be built into the book process, and I'm wondering how. Do you have any methods or thoughts about checking to see if an author does have that kind of patience, if they're prepared to invest that kind of waiting time?
Boy, I don't know. That's a question I've never had before. And so I can't really answer that one. Mm-hmm. I think when people come to us and we're already booked or we're booking far ahead, they understand that things are going to take some time. I think that sometimes authors aren't prepared more for the work book publicity can be. Mm-hmm. I think most everybody's pretty patient.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember anyone being impatient with the process.
Yeah.
Or feeling that I needed to evaluate that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we do sometimes find is that people feel that when the book is accepted, they're done. And they don't realize what hard work and effort needs to go into the publicity, not just by the publicist or the publisher, but by the author, him or herself as well. And mm-hmm. I think that's taken some authors by surprise.
Yeah.
And then if that's the case, then we talk them through it. We mm-hmm. talk about, how we prioritize and where we need their emphasis and focus and clarify what time they have available, things like that. Mm-hmm. We always work through it. But there are definitely a handful of people who've been very surprised about the marathon that is book publicity.
Mm-hmm. And
effort.
Sure. The nature of the work that the author has to do, the quantity of time and effort they have to invest, can you describe that for us typically, what that looks like?
We don't have the same campaign for every book. So we tailor our campaigns to each book and author. So what I'm saying is not necessarily going to be true to every author who might be listening to your show. But increasingly, placing content pieces like guest posts or articles or op-eds is very helpful in book publicity. And we have authors sometimes who have to write more content than they expected. But it's because there's been more interest in content written by them.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be hard, you know, writing a guest post of 350 words and then turning around and being asked to do an interview, an e-interview, and then turning around and the next week you're asked to write an article about, you know, some topic. You know, that takes a lot of time and energy and editing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can be a surprise. Yeah, if that happens.
I can see how fitting that into one's schedule. If you have a particular schedule that you like to use for writing, like so many folks do, I would imagine that finding a way to work that into your schedule and adapting to it might be a challenge for some authors.
It can be, because they do, and many of our authors work and have families and live their lives and volunteer, and so this comes down to planning and good communication too. You know, it's our job to say we're getting these requests. These are very exciting. They can be very helpful. Are you able to do them? How can we help? And so we help them prioritize. We help them schedule, and we talk them through what the process would be. And of course, then if they're not able, then we manage that as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, in my own research, I've observed some variety in the field that is book publicity. It comes with every field. And I'm curious if you could talk to us a little bit about that. I've seen some book publicists who will offer a package of services for $199. And I've seen some like you who take a much bigger, broader approach, and there probably are some in between there. I'm just curious if you could give us a bit of a picture about the landscape.
You know, I can't speak in real detail to the broader landscape because I don't necessarily know what some publicists are doing, but I do know that there are publicists who are just online. I do know there are publicists who emphasize social media, perhaps more heavily than others. What I can speak best to is not the broader landscape, but the kind of focus we have, of course, which is that we work on traditional media, online media, social media, marketing, events. And so we try to meld all the old style publicity with what's new, you know. So yes, we will reach out to the New York Times if your book's appropriate for them, but we'll also have you on Instagram. So our approach is what I call, you know, just the whole pie. And what we do per book is we take a look at the book and we ask, what is the book about? Who is its audience? And how are we going to reach that audience? And then we carve up the pie. You know, this book might need greater social media. This book might do better with radio, and we'll emphasize that more. And so we make each slice of the pie a different component of the campaign. That's our focus.
Sure. Well, that sounds like a fairly effective strategy. Going with a lot of different facets of a campaign at the same time sounds like a good way to get a lot of attention, which is generally what you want if you're going to hire a book publicist.
Right. Yeah. I think the thing that's most important to us is that we read into books. We can't read the whole books before we sign contracts with authors, but we read into them before we speak with them, or just after we speak with them, so that we understand the book. So we know what we're talking about.
Sure.
And so we know that we're the right fits for the pros. We want to be passionate advocates of what we represent.
Yeah.
We want people who we can, we want books we can wave around and fight for, because that's what publishing and book publicity require today. They require that kind of noise. And so it's really important for us that we care about the authors and the books, and then sit down and ask those three questions and carve out a plan that we think will maximize abilities and resources, but that's realistic too, you know, that has our best chance for success.
I get the impression from what you're saying that, a big part for an author who's looking for a book publicist is to look for a book publicist who is looking for a fit just as much as the author is. It might not be beneficial, it occurs to me, if you're talking to a book publicist whose experience is solely related to international thrillers, if you're writing a historical romance, for example.
Right. I always tell authors, what you want is somebody who wants your book, not who needs your book. You don't want to be filling a slot in their calendar. You want somebody who will really care about your writing, care about your experience, who really wants to advocate for your writing and you in particular.
Mm-hmm.
It takes so long to write a book.
Yeah.
Publishing is hard. It's a tough business. So you want people who really want to be there,
mm-hmm.
who really care.
Sure, yeah.
That's what I would want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my publicist is actually my husband. He
yeah.
represents me. I'm lucky
mm-hmm.
that way.
Yeah.
But nobody's going to care about my success more than Rick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every writer should feel that their publicist is there on their team, passionately advocating for their work and fighting in every way he or she can toward meeting their goals.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Otherwise, really, what's the point? You
right.
know, why is that person there if they don't care?
Right. If you want somebody promoting your book, you want them to do it with enthusiasm. It sounds like what you're getting at. That
absolutely.
You want somebody
yes.
who really does believe in what they're saying in the book that they're promoting.
That's my opinion.
Yeah.
You want somebody who cares about the book.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. What questions? We've touched a lot on a lot of issues that an author might want to be interested in when they're determining if they have a good fit with a publicist. I'm wondering if there are questions in particular that you have in mind that are good to ask, things that you want to rule out or make sure that you have included in the mix.
Well, I think it's really important if you're hiring a book publicist to vet people. I think it's important to get references. I think it's important to understand your goals and expectations and then talk with this person that you're considering
mm-hmm.
about how they work and what they do and to assess from that conversation and any materials they provide whether or not they can meet those expectations and help you meet your goals. We provide information about the kinds of services we offer. But then we also write a specific proposal for each author tailored to their book.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives everyone a chance to sort of understand what we're thinking and to see it in writing and to evaluate whether or not they would think that would be effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's wise to talk to more than one person.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to see who you communicate well with.
Yeah.
Is the person clear? Have they answered all your questions?
Mm-hmm.
If you had further questions, were they able to answer those?
Mm-hmm.
I think part of a fit is doing your homework and checking out each publicist and firm, making sure they have a good reputation, check their references. But I think part of it then, too, is just can you communicate well on the phone? Do you feel that this person is someone you get along with?
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Sure. A little good chemistry goes a long way, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, most campaigns have some kind of bump. You know, like books are coming in a little late or, well, with COVID, I mean, that's the best example. Events stopped and everybody had to convert to Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And in those kinds of situations, you want that person to be available. You want that person to be able to tell you what they're doing and how.
Mm-hmm.
If you disagree as an author, you want that person to be able to speak with you about why they're pursuing what they're pursuing and come to some agreement about how that might work best. And, you know, I just think that you need to be able to effectively discuss any difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
It's always easy to discuss the great news.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what do you know, you want to be able to reach this person if your books are coming in late and help them learn from your publisher what to expect, and then they can tell you what they're going to do in terms of addressing it with stores for events. And, you know, so you really do need somebody you feel comfortable with.
Sure, sure. I guess a good conversation is just key, is just, and trying to gauge chemistry, compatibility, yeah, things like that. So
the way we work is if somebody reaches out to us, generally we ask to see the book first. On occasion, sometimes we've spoken first, but generally speaking, we ask to see the book first. Mm-hmm. And if we feel we're good fits, then we have a conversation.
Sure.
And in between all this, we've sent them our information about our services and our fees. Mm-hmm. And then if all that sounds great, we offer a formal written proposal.
Yeah.
And then if all that sounds good and the person's interested, then we send them a contract.
Yeah. Okay.
So there are several steps in our process.
I'm going to guess from things that I've read and heard, I'm changing gears on you here just a minute. Is it reasonable for an author who gets a book accepted by a publisher, big or small, to say, okay, I can not have to worry about marketing now. I don't have to worry about publicity. The publisher is going to handle it all. I have a hunch that's probably not a good strategy, and I'm wondering if you agree. I'm wondering if you have thoughts about that.
I think it depends. I think there's some publishers, large and small, that are very assertive with publicity and do a really good job. I think that there are some that can always use an extra pair of hands. So I think that comes back to vetting your publisher and having clear conversations and understanding from them what exactly they can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And how that might translate.
Mm-hmm.
But often we're coming in to take whole campaigns, and sometimes we come in just to supplement.
Mm-hmm.
So a publisher's going to do X, Y, and Z, and we do A, B, and C.
Yeah.
Sometimes we come in and we do A, B, and C to supplement, but then we stay on longer than a publicity team in-house can, because mm-hmm. they have new books coming in and have to move on.
Yeah.
But we can continue to market for what I call the life of the book,
mm-hmm.
not just the season in which it's published, but the life of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because there can be really good opportunities post-publication for additional events or marketing, especially,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes media.
Yeah.
So this can go a lot of ways, and it really comes back to the author educating him or herself about this team that he or she has put together.
Excellent. I'm wondering, I think you told me you taught book publicity. Am I remembering correctly?
Yeah, I do. I do offer an hour to a 2-hour workshop, and I am often at, you know, like a writing group here or a library there. But actually, just yesterday, Rick and I were talking about the fact that we are probably going to start offering some Zoom classes,
mm-hmm.
an hour to 2-hour Zooms, given COVID and given that a lot of people are not going in places. So we'll probably announce a Zoom class for late fall and one for winter and then one for summer. Probably do about 3 a year.
Okay. Can you share with us just a few tidbits about basic rules, basic guidelines for book publicity that you share with your students?
Well, the first two I've already shared.
Okay.
You've got to understand your timeline. Absolutely. And you really need to know what you want out of this process.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're doing it yourself or hiring someone, or hiring someone and have an in-house publicist, or just have an in-house publicist, you really need to know what your goals are. And you need to give yourself the time to do it correctly by understanding the industry.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've mentioned the other two sort of in passing, like of our four main points. You've got to educate yourself, not just about publicity, but about the industry. For instance, right now there's some issues with supply chain problems, and I think that those are happening in a lot of industries, but it is affecting books in interesting ways. A lot of booksellers are telling people to order their books now for the holiday gifts they want to give.
Mm-hmm.
There is one publisher mentioned to us their printer is having a little trouble getting paper. So, you know, you can have this whole plan and you've studied publicity, but you haven't paid attention to what's going on in the industry, and
yeah.
you might find that, oh, you actually needed to embed more time in your schedule than you realized because there's a supply chain issue.
Mm-hmm.
So don't just educate yourself about publicity. Read about the broader industry. Read Publishers Weekly. Look at the online newsletter Shelf Awareness. Read Booklist and Library Journal, which are trade magazines for the library, public library market.
Yeah.
There are wonderful bloggers. So educate yourself. And then the fourth tip is really to understand the questions and make sure you can answer them. What's the book about? Who is its audience? How am I going to reach that audience?
Sure. You've actually anticipated my next question, which is focused on how authors can do a little bit of that analysis themselves, which is figuring out who their audience is and the direction to go in terms of where do I want to share information about my book? How do I want to promote it?
Well, I think when you're defining audience, you need to sit down and really think carefully about what genre you're in. And you can also go look at the BISAC codes. You know, you might have a suspense title, but when you look at the BISAC codes and they break it down a little bit into different categories, you realize your book is actually romantic suspense.
Can you so tell us, you really, for those who don't know, tell us what BISAC codes are.
A BISAC code is a code that is given to books. Most books have a couple, and it helps define their category for the trade, for the booksellers and the libraries. And you can just, I think you can just Google BISAC codes and go online and find them. But when you're defining your audience, it's really important to understand your category, because books are really shelved by category. So when you go in a bookstore, they're just not all in big piles. They're in suspense, they're in romance, they're in self-help. And then there are subcategories. And it's important to understand which BISACs, which categories would fit your book. And when you do that, then you're beginning to define your audience.
Do most authors, when they come to you, have a good sense already for who their audience might be, or is there some work involved there, typically?
I would say generally authors have a sense of it. I think authors have a lot of wisdom. I think authors know a lot more sometimes than they think they do.
Mm-hmm.
I think most authors know coming in if they're literary fiction or romantic suspense or self-help or, you know, domestic thriller. I think they have a really good sense in our experience. And some of them coming through publishers have already had to fill out certain documents, so they've had to think about it a little bit. So they come in part because they've already started the publishing process, and so they've had to answer a few questions for the publishers.
That's very helpful. Thank you. I'm wondering about other sources of information that you might go to. You mentioned a few, Booklist, Library Journal. Are there any other standard publications or databases that authors can use to gain information and wisdom about their own book publicity?
You know, I'm probably going to forget something, but I do want to mention that your local library and your local independent bookstore are wonderful sources of information. I'm not suggesting people go to these places. You can go online. But you can often see, you know, what the staff picks are. You can often see what reviews are for books. You can see what the most checked out book is. And that'll give you some really good information.
Mm-hmm.
There's something called Novelist at my library, and it's nationwide. And you can look up a book, and then if the library subscribes to Novelist, it will show you similar books.
Mm-hmm.
And so it can give you a sense of what some of the competition is. If you think your book is like a certain book, and you go look it up at the library, and they have Novelist, and it says that these books might be similar, then you've begun to kind of put together a list of books that might be similar to yours, and you can kind of see how they fared in the marketplace, and where mm-hmm. they were reviewed, things mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not advocating that people go out to these places. You can find all this information online.
Mm-hmm. You're very good in anticipating my questions, because my next question was going to be, is it a good thing for writers to figure out what other books might be similar to their own and to study the avenues and methods employed there for promoting the book. It sounds like you're saying, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yes, yeah. I do think so. I think it's part of understanding the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's part of understanding what titles might be comparable. It's always nice when you're talking with somebody in the trade if you can say, well, this was really like Mariette and Ecstasy. Mm-hmm. Because then the bookseller, especially with a new book by a new author, I should say,
mm-hmm.
well, they may not know the author of the book, but, oh, they knew Ron Hansen's Mariette and Ecstasy.
Yeah.
And that gives them a sense of what it is and then where it would go on the shelf or how it might be received. What kind of reader might like it? What kind of editor might like it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Excellent. And a couple of questions about nuts and bolts of your work before our time is up. Do you typically do things like write the blurb on the back of a book or develop an elevator pitch for a book? Is that commonly part of what you do?
It isn't always. It really depends on who's hiring me.
Mm-hmm.
When publishing companies have hired us, yes. I've often written the back cover copy, the elevator pitch, or the keynote. Yes. Generally with authors, I don't do that. They're coming with publishers, and their publishers have prepared the copy, or they've already got the elevator pitch. There are times when I've helped authors refine theirs or refine some of their materials.
Mm-hmm.
So it all just depends.
Mm-hmm.
But generally speaking, we're not doing that part of the marketing.
Yes, okay. I'm curious, which parts of your job do you find you get the most gratification from and the most joy out of? Can you share some thoughts with us about that?
Any success.
Mm-hmm.
Any worthy success. You know, I think we're always thrilled when we get LA Times or New York Times, but sometimes you get a niche publication that's absolutely perfect for a book, and that's fabulous too. We had an author in a regional magazine that's absolutely perfect for her, so important to her book,
mm-hmm.
and we got her in there twice. That was a huge thrill. So again, it comes back to what you're hoping to achieve for each book,
mm-hmm.
what the goals are for each book. The book that got in the regional magazine also did get national media, but we celebrate every good hit we get, every happy, well-targeted hit.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Caitlin Hamilton Summey, I want to thank you so very much for being with us today and sharing with us
thank
so
you
much
for
of your time and your expertise. Caitlin Hamilton Summey's book, Geographies of the Heart, is due out in January 2022, published by Foment Press. And Caitlin is also a book publicist who works with authors of all types to market and promote their books to help them find audiences, and is a tremendous resource. Caitlin, do you have a website that folks can go to if they have questions?
Absolutely. You can find us online at CaitlinHamiltonMarketing.com.
Wonderful. Caitlin, again, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciated the opportunity, and it was a pleasure.
To learn more about Caitlin Hamilton Summey, go to CaitlinHamiltonSummey.com. That's Caitlin, CAITLIN, Hamilton, HAMILTON, Summey, SUMMIE.
next to me at the show. And even though 2 feet away from me, I turn to stone. I said I